All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, where I always forget to put the microphone in front of my face before I start talking. Broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And today I'm absolutely tongue-tied because of Spike. I can see him in the green room mind controlling me, making me mess up all my words right now. Spike Cohen needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway because I like being redundant. He was the Libertarian vice presidential candidate, a good friend I've known for several years, a pretty awesome Libertarian, pretty well spoken, which is rare for Libertarians because we're all just crazy. It's going to be awesome to have him on the show. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool things. But of course, before we get started, I want to ask you to remember to like and share, hit the like button. Start typing some comments. Say, hi, I'm here, because it's going to help our algorithm, which is totally screwing us right now. Google hates us. They hate us so much. If you're on our mailing list, go join again if you have Gmail and use a different email address, because Gmail is blocking all of our emails going out to our mailing list. That's how bad it is. This show is brought to you by Nug of Knowledge, 50-state legal hemp and cannabis products. CBD, hemp flower, and THC Delta 8 vape cartridges, which is really awesome. It's like 50 state legal weed. It's pretty awesome. I guess that's all I have to say. Thanks for joining. Oh, wait, on to the show. Spike, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. I'd like to, by the way, you forgot to mention that Nug of Knowledge is not your everyday CBD supplier. They also have a part of the proceeds go to help end the disastrous and failed war on drugs. In addition, Nug of Knowledge also has a compassionate use program to give CBD products and medicinal hemp products to veterans and people who cannot afford these healing cures. Many people that use Nug of Knowledge say that it helps them with their joint pain, with their energy levels, or even just for a much needed pick me up. So if you go to nugofknowledge.com today, you can get the CBD that you need. And if you use checkout code Spike, you get 10% off. Hey.
That's amazing. Well, I left that all open because I know you give such a better presentation and you've got your code in there. Yes. For your discount. And so it's amazing you can do that. And I'm guaranteeing that's like not rehearsed at all, I'm guessing, right?
It was at one point, but now it's just, I can say that on right. Cue now. I don't have to pull it up anymore. How are you doing, man?
Awesome. I'm doing good. I don't know why. Whenever I have you on the show, I feel like getting in a really goofy mood.
I'm a goofy guy. We like to get goofy.
Totally makes sense. Yeah, it's going awesome. It rained a little bit today. We got some nice weather down here. How's the weather up there?
The weather is good up here. The last time I think we talked about weather, you were stuck in a hotel room with no power because you did the reverse Ted Cruz where you flew
That's
into
right.
the snowstorm. You guys crossed paths on the way. He's going to Cancun and you're headed from Mexico directly into the snowstorm. So if you want to talk about a politician who cares, Dan Berman was willing to fly directly into one of the most brutally affected areas of the snowstorm in order to spread the message of liberty and also to get really, really cold. Thank you for that. No, we're doing good up here. The weather's in the 70s. I am counting the days. Usually it's around mid-May when the water becomes warm enough here to start swimming in, because I live like 6 blocks from the ocean. So that's pretty much what I do. Usually every day. Last year, I didn't go to the beach once. Well, I didn't swim once because of the campaign. I did get to swim one day in Miami, but usually I'm every day in Myrtle Beach. So we're doing good.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess you're close to Florida. You got the good weather.
Ish.
Ish. Well, anytime it gets chilly up there, Mikasa es su casa. You're always welcome down here.
That means a lot. It's always chillier up here than down there. So thank you.
Yes. Our water is warm all year round. I know. That's why it attracts people like Ted Cruz during snowstorms. no, you know what's really, really funny about this? So I found out the hotel he took his daughters to is actually a hotel that I have friends who work there. And so I was like, oh, dude, I called up my friend. I'm like, can you deliver like a bottle of champagne and like a note? And like, you know, it says like taxation is theft or, you know, something like that. But he was only there for like 3 hours to drop his daughters off. So it's like, I don't know. It might have been like that was his whole plan the whole time. Like, well, I'm just going to waste some taxpayer money and just, you know, drop the kids off.
It wouldn't be the first time he's wasted taxpayer money for no reason.
Right. So, but yeah. So, okay. Lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. What do you think is the most important issue going on right now? There's so many to choose from.
Wow, that's a tough one. So I think the biggest issue going on right now in the U.S. is what has really been going on since COVID came here, which is that government is leveraging and harnessing and nurturing the fear that is coming, understandably in some cases, coming from this pandemic, from this virus, in order to push for greater controls on our lives. And I mean, if you're a libertarian, that's of no surprise to you, but we have to talk about specifically what they're doing. When COVID first came here, they didn't allow testing. They shoved COVID patients into nursing homes and mental health facilities. They basically created the conditions for the virus to spread wildly out of control and to have a much higher fatality rate than it would otherwise naturally have by literally putting the patients in with the people that are the most likely to die from it, the elderly, people with chronic health issues, people with multiple health issues, people with, you know, all that are on multiple medications and have weakened immune systems, like literally the exact people that you would want to keep away from any virus, but especially a virus like this. That's where they made sure everyone got it. And then when we started seeing, we went from going, it might be here. Is it here yet? To say, oh my gosh, tens of thousands of people already have it. And we have, you know, high single digit and low double digit fatality rates from us. One out of every 10 people who get it is dying. They leveraged that to push for things that we would have never, that the general public would have never been okay with, things like lockdowns and mandates and all of this stuff. Those of us who had common sense, I love looking at my memories from, you know, a year ago, starting in March, where I was voluntarily quarantining because I had gotten sick in New Hampshire in February, didn't know if it was COVID because there was no way to test for it, did know that it wasn't the flu and that it was something that was pretty bad because it knocked me out for about 3 weeks. And based on that, I voluntarily quarantined during the time I was sick and for about maybe 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, just in case. It was a new virus, didn't know how long, you know, I could spread it afterwards. There was no way to test for it. But while I was voluntarily quarantining, I was making anti-lockdown videos and saying why lockdowns don't work and the logic or lack of logic behind the lockdowns and why telling everyone to stay inside for 2 weeks isn't even feasible and how you're going to tell everyone to go to the same store at the same time in a very, you know, controlled period of hours. So everyone's all stir crazy. And then you shove them in the same building at the same, how's that going to slow down the spread of a virus? And sure enough, we now have the data from the last year plus to show us that the lockdowns did absolutely nothing to slow down the spread of the virus. Of course they right. didn't. But now here they are with the vaccine passports. So you have. That'll stop it. Now, keep in mind, again, before we even get into the absurdity of these passports, it's going to take several more months to get these things ready for prime time in the first place. Okay. At best, it'll probably take even longer because there's going to be, I mean, you remember the Obamacare website, how long that took? Imagine a freaking database of people's sensitive health records that can be accessed by anyone. It's going to take well over.
And how many billions did that cost?
Oh, God,
that was like. Wasn't that like that was like it was something ridiculous. It was in the billions to make this website, which is like any, you know, any idiot on WordPress is like, I can make that for $5,000.
The website itself was over $1 billion when it was all said and done. Yeah. And it was literally a WordPress website. I was still actively working on web design back then. And I looked at the code and I'm like, these are plugin problems they're having. Like, maybe they should upgrade from the free trial. I don't know. Like, there's no way that this isn't as bad. There's no way that this is taking the millions of dollars. But now these same people, I can assure you, are going to be able to create a passport system for the entire world that certainly won't have any problems. But let's say it only takes 6 months, okay? By then, we will already have effectively ended this virus. Between the people who already got the virus and between the vaccination, we're going to be well past herd immunity at that point. And they know that. This is not being built for COVID. This is being built to create a medical-based caste system whereby they don't just decide if you can leave the country. They decide if you get to go to Walmart. They decide if you get to go to school. They decide if you get to go to the store. They decide if you get to go to a disaster shelter or an abuse shelter or a medical clinic or, you know, anything that you might, or an arena or a mall or a shopping center, or really anywhere to participate in civil society right. in any substantive way. And it'll be based on, and they're creating the technical infrastructure for this, but they're also creating the social infrastructure. The idea that if you're not vaccinated, you're going to kill everyone around you. You are a danger to yourself and everyone around you, and you have to be kept away from everyone to whatever extent necessary. Now, again, this is a virus that has, depending on who you ask, anywhere from a 0.5% fatality rate to a 2% fatality rate, which makes it more deadly than the flu. I'm not saying it's the flu, but this is not everyone man the decks and no one be allowed to go outside unless they are vaccinated. This is a virus that we should take seriously, but not, this is absurd what the way that they're talking about it. When you look at a virus that has this kind of fatality rate, and when you see that, for example, there was someone, me, who went around the country, 35 states, 100 campaign stops, give or take, got well within 6 feet of tens of thousands of people. I was regularly tested for COVID. So was my running mate. So was Joe. We were regularly tested for COVID to make sure that we weren't inadvertently spreading a virus around the whole continental U.S. Every single time we were tested, well, I assume for Joe. I know for me, every single time I was tested, it came back negative. A few of the times I was also tested for the antibodies. That came back negative. So I never got COVID. And I was able to participate in a hyper travel schedule where I was in a different state almost every single day. I was able to participate because it was 35 states, but the many states I visited multiple times. I was able to come in contact with a hyper, I mean, most people in a given year are not going to go to 35 states. They're not going to go and meet tens of thousands of people. I was able to not get COVID by engaging in basic health and safety protocols that I've been using long before COVID. Wash and sanitize your hands regularly. Don't eat after other people. Don't drink after other people. An additional thing that I was
doing. Use your foot to open the gas station bathroom door when you leave instead of your hand.
Yeah, yeah. I started doing that. I started using my foot to open stuff and just like basic stuff, right? I was only wearing masks if the venue required it. I was not usually, the only time I actually obeyed an outside mask mandate was in New York City. And it was because there was a cop every 30 to 40 feet walking around making sure everyone's wearing masks. So that was the one time I was like, all right, fine, I'll wear the mask. Pretty much everywhere else I was like, I mean, in Miami, we were supposed to be wearing masks. We weren't even allowed to assemble. So we did it anyway, because what are you going to do? And Univision's here, so they're going to have to watch you arrest people that are salsa dancing. Have fun with that. And so we did our illegal event there. We were able to stay safe. Me and the whole crew were able to stay safe by keeping basic health and safety protocols. If that's the case, and of course, none of us were vaccinated. There was no vaccine at that point. So if that's the case, and if even if we had gotten it, the likelihood of us dying or suffering in any real way is, it's actually more likely that we have little to no symptoms. There is absolutely no justification to tell people that you shouldn't be allowed to participate in civil society unless you get a vaccine that still is technically in health trials until 2023. We don't know long-term effects of this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy, but okay. Even as a libertarian, I kind of play devil's advocate sometimes and I ask questions like, okay, yeah, we can all take personal responsibility. We can wash our hands. We can do all these things. Basic hygiene. But aren't there plenty of people who are of a certain mindset that they wouldn't do any of that unless there was a threat of violence used against, I shouldn't say that, unless they were ordered to by their government to do these things? Aren't there some people who would just be like, oh, that virus doesn't exist. I'm going to go spit on everything and blah, blah, which is ridiculous because no one runs around spitting on everything. But like, I'm not going
to
wash my hands.
You're trying to be devil's advocate here. Continue devil's advocating.
Right. So there are some people who are probably going to, you know, not participate in this, and they might put themselves more at risk. And so other people are like, well, and so, you know, we have to have these laws because those people are going to put themselves at risk, which means they're going to spread it more, and they're more likely going to put me at risk because I'm going to go to the same grocery store they're going to, and they're right. more likely to touch something. So what do you say to that?
Well, the first thing I would say is that someone who is being told that there's a virus that is anywhere from 3 to 20 times more deadly than the flu and responds by saying, I'm going to spit on everything, or not even that extreme, but I'm going to go in and continue doing whatever I want. And if anything, I'll do more than I usually would do. They're not going to get stopped by orders either. These are the people that, you know, they look at the speed limit and instead of going, you know, 5 or 10 miles over the speed limit, like normal people like us do, they go 20 and 30 miles over the speed limit because they don't care. The odds of you being able to effectively stop every single one of these people are next to nothing. We know, again, that the lockdowns, even in places that had high levels of compliance, it didn't actually change anything. The only way you could actually stop a virus that spreads this easily, it spreads roughly the same as the flu. At first, they thought it might spread like the cold, where it's actually like you can catch it airborne and stuff like that. If that were the case, we'd all already have it. It spreads roughly the same as the flu. It may live a little bit longer outside the body than the flu, but it doesn't seem to be more likely to catch it from touching something than it would be from the flu. It's a respiratory virus that is primarily spread from prolonged respiratory exposure or having someone cough or sneeze on you or something like that. It spreads the same way the flu does. And if that's the case, the only way you can stop that from spreading is by everyone staying in their house, not leaving their house for anything, okay? Not to go to work, not to do essential work, not to get food, not to do, you stay inside of your home for 2 to 3 weeks. And I mean, everyone, if anyone doesn't participate in this, it will eventually just start spreading once everyone's outside again. That isn't possible. And if you could somehow magically make everyone stay inside for 2 to 3 weeks, there'd be tens of millions of deaths. The farms would lie fallow. The power plants would melt down or stop working. You wouldn't have cable. You wouldn't have power. You wouldn't have water. You wouldn't have anything. Civil society would crumble if everyone had to stay in their houses for even a couple days, much less 2 or 3 weeks. So since that's not an option, everything else is just a half measure. And at any point when people are being allowed to congregate together, it's going to spread again. And yes, even if you're wearing a mask, because in fact, if anything, with the mask, now people are like, oh, it's okay, I got a mask on, I'm invincible. No, you probably still, if someone sneezes near you and you're wearing a mask and they're wearing a mask, you're still getting the fomites, you're still getting the, maybe not quite as much exposure, but you know, these things are not ironproof, are not ironclad. They you can easily breathe in and out of them, so you can easily sneeze in and out of them. So I would say that. The other thing I would say is if you are worried about the actions of others, you can do what I did during the height of the pandemic when things were still in the open about just how easily it spread. I just assumed every person I met and everything I touched had COVID, and I acted accordingly. And I didn't have to stop touching people, and I didn't have to stop being around things. I just regularly washed and sanitized my hands. I typically avoided hugging people for at least, especially during the campaign, because again, I did not want to inadvertently be spreading it. I'm back to hugging and shaking hands with people that are comfortable doing it. But during the campaign, just because I was literally meeting like 1,000+ people a day sometimes, I just didn't want to be doing that. But even before that, I was just, you know, being smart. You know, I don't have to kiss everyone on the face that I meet. I can hug people. I don't have to hug them with my mouth, right? You can hug someone and then you can, you know, and when you shake hands, you can just make sure that shortly after, before you touch your face, that you wash your hands. If you are concerned about the actions of others, then adjust your behavior accordingly. And it doesn't have to be an extreme adjustment. Just assume the worst and, you know, be smart with how you're conducting yourself. And again, if I've been able to do everything I can do, then I would say the average person can go living their life, taking basic health and safety protocols, and probably not even get the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting too is like, okay, well, let me ask you this. What do you do if you think you have it?
Oh, shit, if you think you have.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was just a pregnant pause.
No, my camera's been like, I don't know what it's doing here. There it goes.
Okay.
I have an Apple and it's a piece of garbage, man.
Oh, wow.
This laptop sucks. Apple sucks.
This message is brought to you by Android Gang. So you're saying what do I do if I think that?
Or what would you do if you thought you had it? Because I see a lot of stuff going out there. Like, I mean, it's all we hear about, right? It's all I've seen on social media is wash your hands, wear 3-4 masks, you know, get the vaccine, do all this other stuff. But what do you do if you think you have it? How do you take care of yourself?
Well, I can tell you what I did because I did think I had it. I don't know. You know, they're saying that so depending on who you ask, I was told that the first time I had an antibody test was in mid to late June. And I had gotten sick in mid February. Now, some people say because I was got negative on the antibodies, that means I didn't have COVID back in February. Some said that it's possible that the antibodies already went away and either I'm not immune anymore or my BNT cells took over and now I am immune. I tend to think that I go ahead.
That's a really important point. This is something a lot of people don't understand. You can actually get tested. So let's say you had a vaccine. You can get tested to see if that vaccine is still active. It's not antibodies. It's like there's this other.
Yeah.
I don't know what they call it. But there are people. So like, let's say you had a chickenpox vaccine when you were a baby. Because you had that doesn't mean you might be immune for it for 6 months. But then after that, that vaccine is like it's not even in your system. And, you know, the way they're preaching this current vaccine is, you know, and I mean, I get it. It's probably like part of the 98% effective rate part of it. But I don't know. Or is that just like, no, it's 98% effective in the first 6 months. But after that, we don't know if it goes away, if it's still going to be effective at all after that. Nobody knows because nobody's had it before.
No
idea.
No one knows, and no one even knows how this technology fully works because it's an mRNA vaccine, and they've been studying this for a couple, I think four or five years. mRNA vaccine for all sorts of different things. There's actually an mRNA vaccine they're working on for MS, which has shown a lot of promise in animal models. It might be the future, right? It might end up solving all the issues we've had with previous vaccines and allow us to have vaccines for stuff, you know, days after it's identified. There's all sorts of great stuff that could happen, or it could end up being a nightmare. We really don't know, and we don't know its efficacy. You know, they're still in active testing of how long does it last. This may end up being something that we have to get, not necessarily boosters, but you know, it may be like the flu shot where you have to get a new one every year. We really don't know, and they have to admit that they don't know. But then they'll turn around and say it's totally safe, it's totally effective. You should be forced to take this. You don't know if it works fully yet. You don't know how safe it is yet. You don't know how long it lasts. You don't know how it would affect people with autoimmune disorders like me. I have MS. That's why I'm not taking it. I've been able to stay safe without it. And I'm not concerned. I'm not really hip to take something that has zero safety data specifically for people with MS and other autoimmune diseases. So going back to your question, what do you do if you think you have it? I can tell you what I did when I thought I had it. I stayed home. I was sick for like 2 or 3 weeks. I think I might have had it, but I may not have. I may have just had some other virus. I was at the New Hampshire primaries where there were hundreds of thousands of people from all over the world. I might have gotten some other weird exotic thing. Who knows? I don't believe it was just a cold. They said it might be a cold, but I've had the cold before. This thing had me on my butt for the better part of 2 or 3 weeks. And so I tend to think that it was some kind of viral something, either they tested me for the flu, but it might have been some other flu. Who knows? Whatever it was, I stayed home. I kept to myself. I took care of myself. I drank lots of water. I only needed Tylenol for the first few days to keep, because the fever got pretty high. After that, the fever stayed around like 100, 101, and I think it's actually good to have a low level fever. It helps you heal. So I kind of allowed myself to keep like 100, 101. And then, you know, eventually I felt better. And because this virus was new and they didn't know much about how long the incubation period is after you're not sick, and there was no way for me to test to know if I was still positive or negative, I then continued to voluntarily stay home for another, about, I think, 2 weeks. So I was home for almost a month total. And I didn't spread it to anyone else, and I was okay. And I think that in retrospect, I probably was safe to be able to go back out and go around people like maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 days after I wasn't feeling well anymore. And now with testing, would they be able to know if I was positive or negative? So yeah, it's, if you're, this is before COVID. If you're sick with the flu, stay home. You're just going to give other people the flu. Your boss would much rather you not make everyone sick in the store or the restaurant or the business or whatever. Stay home while you're sick. And then when you're feeling better, you go back out. That's how you deal with being sick.
The reason I ask this is because, you know, all of the propaganda is telling us what we're supposed to do to not get it, but there's nothing. And I'm not a doctor, right? So I'm not going to say like, you can eat your vitamins and you'll be fine. But there's zero talk about we actually have immune systems that are supposed to defend against these things. And you actually can eat certain things that are going to make that immune system stronger. That's that's kind of a fact at this point. There are medications that you can take that are, I mean, the hydroxychloroquine thing, which like was totally blown out of proportions when Trump said it. And then everyone was like, oh, no, it's a lie. It's going to kill you. Yeah, and then they double backed on that quietly. But there's that. There's other potential medications out there, but nobody's, even now, even today, no, like if you get sick and you go to the hospital, they're kind of like, well, nobody's telling you, like, I haven't seen any propaganda saying, hey, if you think you have it, this is what you should do. These are the possible treatments.
Start taking these things. Exactly. Yep.
Exactly. Start boosting your immune system. You know, I had a really bad cold a couple of years ago. And one of my friends was like, hey man, eat raw garlic a couple times a day, like a whole clove and not like the bunch of the one little piece and drink lots of red berry juice, like pomegranate, cranberries, all this other stuff. It's really good for your immune system. I did all that. I don't know if that made it better or worse or what, right? Because it's like we don't have access to the parallel universe to see exactly what happened to exactly me in that exact cold, right? But it's the same thing as the masks, right? The masks are like, you know, they say, oh, well, a mask, you know, it's not going to guarantee that you're not going to get the virus, but it's going to reduce it by like 5%. You wash your hands, it reduces it 5%. You do all these things. Right. Every single one is 5%. Yep. Okay, well, where's the thing about eating garlic that increases your chance of surviving it? 5%. What about drinking lots of cranberry juice? 5%. Where are all these things? Why aren't they telling us about this? And they're just like, no. Go to the doctor, have them make you unconscious, stick a tube down your throat, blow pressurized air in there so they blow your lungs apart and kill you. And then we'll write it off as a COVID death. There was no other way. There was no saving you. Sorry.
Or go outside and get sun exposure and naturally create vitamin D and regulate your immune system, which, by the way, this was another thing that I've been regularly doing for quite some time for my MS. So there's been studies that show that people with autoimmune disorders that get more regular sun exposure on as much of their body as possible, because each part of your body can only produce a certain amount of vitamin D2 from the sun. So it's not just about getting a lot of exposure on certain parts. It's about getting and it really is like 15 to 20 minutes a day, but on as much of your body as possible. So I've been going outside, you know, wearing like, you know, shorts and getting sun for years now, because it has shown that people with autoimmune disorders have more regulated and better immune systems when they naturally get more sun. Because it turns out we were designed to be outside. Like as the animals that we are, human beings were designed to be outside for at least certain periods of time every day. And it's unnatural for us to be inside this much. You know, another thing that helps? Learning how to regulate and deal with your fears and your emotions. There's been all sorts of studies showing that better emotional health leads to better, stronger, and better regulated immune systems. In fact, there's increasing correlation between autoimmune issues and mental health issues, because when you have mental health issues, your immune system thinks that there's something that it has to fight. So what did they do? They told everyone to stay inside out of the sun and be afraid.
Right. Yeah, well, and that's exactly right. And the sun actually contributes to your mood. It affects everything. And they've done studies that it's ridiculous. I used to be like really into like this whole, like, you know, I was about to say mind control. How your mind, the power that your mind has over your body. Yep. And like there were studies where like if you force yourself to smile, you know, there's like all kinds of chemicals in your body, right? Like cortisol for like your stress and like all sorts of stuff. And like if you force yourself to smile, you will actually become happy. There goes my
you're wiring your brain.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous how true all this stuff is, and it works. But it's not, you know, you can't talk about it in the, like, it's not in the mainstream, but you can't even talk about it because if you do, it's like, oh, that's crazy stuff. No, that can't be true. That doesn't make any sense.
I was just gonna say,
believe that.
Exactly. Well, and not just not to believe it, but this is a tail wagging the dog situation, because one of the reasons that you don't hear it in the medical establishment is because if I, as a doctor, tell you that you should be and actually recommend primarily that you use these holistic methods to deal with stuff, things that even have studies showing that they work, because they're not part of the insurance actuarial, because they're not something that can be, that I can point and say, well, the insurance company approves this as an approved treatment that the FDA says is approved. Not only can I not charge as much, but if something goes wrong and you as the patient try to blame the holistic thing, my malpractice insurance doesn't cover that. So there is a perverse incentive for me to go, listen, I don't know about this nutrition stuff. I don't know about this wellness stuff. Here's some drugs that I know that if something goes wrong, my malpractice insurance is covered because I prescribed you something that the FDA has said is approved for this type of thing, even if it doesn't have the best effectiveness rate, even if it doesn't have the best safety profile, even if it probably may not even be a good idea for you to do this, I'm protected. And I don't end up losing everything when I'm sitting here dealing with 30 patients a day just to make ends meet. I can just hand this off to you. However it goes, I don't have to worry about being sued out of existence. Whereas if I go out on a limb and go, well, you know, you could have more, have more immune boosting foods, and you could get more sun, and I can recommend that stuff as well as a side thing. But I got to first push that FDA approved thing to make sure that I'm protecting myself. And it's also, I'm able to make more money. So, you know, this is, and that lends itself all the way into what happens when you talk about holistic stuff. People go, well, if that's the case, why doesn't the FDA approve it? Why aren't the doctors prescribing sunshine if that's the case? And then when you try to explain to them, they go, well, that's just crazy talk. No, it's not. And if you want to go the medical route, okay, fine. Let's talk the medical route. Donald Trump contracted COVID. Okay. This is a overweight, actually, technically, according to his BMI, he's obese, 72 or 73-year-old man who we know has heart issues, which is common for a obese 70-year-old man. It's a fat man in his 70s who eats McDonald's every day. Wonder of wonders, he also has heart problems. He is a prototypical example of someone who should have had a really bad time with COVID. And when he first got it, we now know that he was having a bad time with COVID. We weren't told about it. We were told, oh, everything's fine. He's really recovering. He wasn't. They had to take him to Walter Reed and put him on oxygen because his oxygen level was in the 70s. Okay. So then they put him on that. But then here's what they put him on. They put him on dexamethasone, I think it's called, and zinc. And I wish I could remember all the things. They put him on a handful of things, most of which are generic drugs, right? They put him on these things and he starts getting better, like really quickly. He gets so much better that within a week and a half of that, he's dancing poorly, but he's dancing at one of his events. He's been cleared. He's been told he's negative. He's been told that he can't spread it to anyone else. It's not in his system anymore. He's perfectly fine. And he was out dancing. This is a man that statistically should have either died or at least been very, very sick for many weeks and was already on that trajectory before they started trying some stuff on him. Now, if I don't know of a better case for right to try when it comes to COVID, here is someone that should have done really poorly, did start doing really poorly, and then had these medical interventions. And immediately, as you mentioned, you know, why aren't they talking about the things you can do at home? Most of these things, except for the exception of dexamethasone, most of the other stuff was like supplements and generic drugs and over-the-counter stuff. So why not tell people to take that? These are things that have been around forever. They have a high safety profile. We know that they're largely safe. If we're talking to people that, you know, have a much higher chance of dying or having, you know, actual organ damage and stuff like that, have them take this stuff instead. What if it works so that, you know, before they have to get that higher medical intervention, they can just take this stuff, have a much more mild case and get better faster? Why aren't we talking about that? And that's medical stuff. That's not even the holistic, you know, stand outside barefoot and you know, get the natural EMF from the earth type stuff that us people love. You know, it's the medical intervention stuff. Why don't they focus on that?
Yeah, no. And you know, this is that's really why I brought it up, because, you know, there's the question, right? Why is the government telling us we have to get, you know, vaccines and passports and all this other? Oh, it's because they care about us. Well, really, if they care about us, why aren't they informing us about all these other things that are out there that are known to at least increase your chances 5, 10, 15% at a time? And you do a whole handful of them, that's 50%, whatever. If they care about us, why not? Why aren't they telling us this? And that's, I don't want to be the one to say it, but they don't care about us.
They don't care. The government that would not allow your doctors to test you for COVID, and instead, if you got COVID, they'd shove you in nursing homes so that the people that are the most likely to die from it end up getting it, instead of putting you in an actual like emergency ICU facility where you can be kept from people that don't want to also get it, and who then use that as an excuse to push for lockdowns that caused immeasurable human suffering, not to mention the economic suffering that came from it, and have continued to try to blame you, the individual, for the spread of the COVID when they're the ones who created the conditions for it to spread so wildly in the first place and cause so many deaths. And then they lie to it about it to their own investigators when it comes time to say how many people died as a result of their bad actions, would like you to know that they care so much about you that they now want to make sure that you can't go anywhere unless you get a vaccine that they still can't tell you is safe or effective. That's right. How much they care.
I want to jump over to this for a second, or jump back to this, the vaccine passports. And I'm looking this up so I don't misquote it, but I'm not an expert on this, but I know a little bit. Do you know when, I mean, passports have been around since before we were born, right? So we were kind of born into that world and they were always there. Do you know when and why passports were first started? They started using those for travel between countries.
I don't know exactly when they first started, but I know that they're a relatively new intervention and they were fought fiercely against when they were introduced, precisely because people said it's none of the government's business where I go or why I'm going there. I do not offhand remember the actual, like, what their pretext was for it, but I do know it was relatively recent.
It was during the First World War, and I don't know, I can't cite, you know, exactly what it was, but I can guarantee you that just the fact that it was during that period, it was, you know, oh, well, we need to make sure that when someone comes here, we know if they're German or Polish or
French, you know, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so this is the origin of this. And like, I get it. There's still risk, right? Like, I went to Uganda a couple of years ago and, you know, it was interesting. So Uganda requires that you show a yellow fever vaccine just to get past customs, right?
Yeah.
And so I go to a travel agency, and there was a worldwide shortage of the yellow fever vaccine because there's only like one company that's allowed to manufacture it. It wasn't a worldwide shortage. It was a shortage in the US and Mexico and a couple other places because they only allow one company to sell it. But there's other companies. Right.
Other countries that you can get it easily. Yeah.
Exactly. And so when I went to, it was a US government travel agency was the only, or travel, you know, office, the only place I could find that had one. And this was in, I think this was in Michigan. And they said, yeah, we have one. And, you know, they didn't say anything when I booked my appointment, but when I got there, they were like, oh, by the way, this is an experimental European one. It's not FDA approved. It's blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, well, that sounds fucking wonderful. It's something you might have told me before I booked my appointment and flew all the way out here. And it's, you know, so this is all going on. But so the, like, as part of their program, right, because you have to pay them for the visit, they go through like this, you know, they enter Uganda in the computer and they tell you, okay, these are all the risks in Uganda. And they're like, okay. And they tried to push me on like 100 different vaccines, right? There's like hepatitis, there's this, there's that. And they're like, are you planning on having unprotected sex with AIDS infected people? Like, you should take this one. Like, it was like this list. And it's like, are you going
to
be swimming?
Who would say yes to that? Like, some of the questions, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Are you going
to
be handling human blood? Like,
yeah, like the question. Can you imagine going into a government office and say, man, I'm glad you asked me that because yes, I am planning on having unprotected sex with AIDS patients. What do you got for me? Like, it's incredible. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
But yeah, so it was, and what I kind of liked about this was that at least they said, okay, look, these are all the risks. Here's like some of the stuff, but they weren't like saying, oh, you have to do this and you should really do it. They weren't really pressuring it, right? It was kind of an, and I get it. There's still like in the background, there's still kind of like all kinds of bullshit incentives and everything. But it was just kind of like, okay, look, here's the smorgasbord. Take what you like. And so I just took the yellow fever. Luckily nothing happened, but it's like, you know, I get it. There's my point is, I get it. There's realistic risks that in certain parts of the world, there's, you know, there's a certain virus that is, you know, shit. Okay. Here's an example. Things travel from one place to another and they can really affect the environment. So, the snails that we have in California or that we had, because I'm not there anymore. Those were brought over from somewhere else. There's a plant called ice plant, which actually that was the government's fault. There's a plant called ice plant that they brought, which is kind of like this weed, and they put it on the sides of the highways to like dig its roots in because it spreads like a weed, and it holds the dirt together so the dirt doesn't erode and the roads stay there, right? So they put this stuff in. Next thing you know, it's like all over the fucking
what could
everywhere.
Possibly go wrong with in introducing an invasive plant species
right
across the entire interstate system,
right? And so like, and so I get it, like stuff like this happens, but at the same time it's like, okay, you know, I mean, I've smuggled tamales from Mexico to the US. I've brought some plants back and forth that I'm probably not supposed to, but it's like, you know, okay, whatever. I mean, like it, you know, this isn't it. Like, I get it. My point is, like, I get it. There's like, there are things that we can sit here and say, man, I wish that, you know, this virus that I know is on the other side of the world would stay contained. It sucks that anybody has it, but at least if it stays there, then maybe, you know, the world will get rid of it sooner. And right. So, like, I can see that as an incentive for creating this whole passport system. But the reality is, most of the people imposed with these passports is like, that's not what's going on here. If I were the government and I were sitting here saying, oh yeah, we have this amazing passport system, what are the benefits? Let me write out all the benefits, all the pros and cons. The biggest pro is I get to control when people come and go. I get to control if somebody hasn't paid their taxes, I get to cancel their passport. Yeah. It's not, oh, we get to stop viruses, and they'll probably write it down, but it's like, that's not what they're doing with this.
Yeah. And if it were effective with that, it would have been effective for it. The thing is, and again, talking specifically about viruses, if this is the justification that they're going to use, then they need to be honest with everyone about the fact that by the time we knew that there was a virus in China that was spreading the way that it was already here. That's not... There is entirely too much inter-travel and international commerce and travel that is happening, that if a virus that spreads as easily as the flu comes into existence and actually starts spreading in any area, even if it's out in the freaking in the rainforest, at some point, if that comes into the more developed part of that country, without fail, it is going to end up in many countries here first. Probably among the first, because everyone comes here and we go everywhere. And we are one of the global hubs for commerce and travel and diplomatic relations and everything else. It is impossible that a virus that spreads as easily as the flu is going to be contained by anything except your personal choice to keep it from yourself by making smart choices. There is no institutional way to stop it before you're aware of its existence. Because if it, the government, the Chinese government actually prevented people from knowing about this for about a month, give or take. They jailed the original doctor who identified it and tried to say it wasn't happening and all this stuff. But let's say it didn't take a month. Let's say it only took about the, let's say, week or so that it took for that doctor to identify there was a problem. And let's say that there was a rapid response system in place to spread this knowledge all over the world. That is multiple days that people have been getting it, not getting sick, because we know that anywhere between 80 and 90% of the people who get it exhibit little to no symptoms. This was during cold and flu season. So if someone gets the sniffles, they go, that's cold and flu season. I'm probably just got the sniffles, right? And so you've got all these people. So by the time, that means that it's already been around for at least a few weeks before they first have people coming in and identifying that it's not the flu, that it's something new, okay? That means you're already about a month into this thing. And if you have something with an RO, a rate of spread of around 3 or 4 without any kind of intervention, that means every single day the number of people that have this thing is quadrupling. And if you do the math on that, at least quadrupling, and if you do the math on that, it's impossible that it won't end up here. And if you have a virus like Ebola, which doesn't spread very easily unless you're in very, very unsanitary conditions, then you don't have to worry about it. There were no controls in place to keep people from, with Ebola from coming here. We had one case, or no, we had one person who got it who spread it to 2 or 3 other people, actually, where he spread it to, I think, 2 people and someone else spread it. We had like 5 people that got Ebola and one of them died. You cannot try to allow, you cannot allow government to have total control over our lives in order to try to either prevent a virus that can't be prevented or prevent a virus that otherwise would kill a person. A single human being who actually was the person who came here from the place where he got it. So it wasn't even like he got it here.
Right. And with Ebola, it's interesting too, because I remember when that happened a few years ago, they were like, that started out the same way as COVID, as far as the propaganda. They were telling us like, oh my God, it's going to be an epidemic. We're all going to get it. We're all going to die.
40% that lasted for like a rate, week. Yep.
Yeah. That lasted for like a week, but they were doing it. Mm-hmm. Yep. They were, you know, because that's how they get their eyeballs on their news channel, or who knows if that's CIA backed, whatever. But aside from turning this into the COVID show,
multiple justifications, yeah,
yeah. So, what else is going on? Where else did this train wreck? Where did this train get derailed?
Oh gosh, long before any of this. One thing I will say is this is what government control of healthcare looks like. You know, and you have people in government, both Republicans and Democrats, they're constantly, you'll notice the argument in healthcare is always who pays the bill, right? They talk about the fact that there's this big, ever-growing bill for healthcare, more than any other country's paying. The government's paying, you know, more money per taxpayer than almost any other country on earth. And then we're paying another 3 times that out of pocket. You know, there's this huge bill, it's 4 or 5 times what any other developed country's paying, and our outcomes aren't even that much better. In some cases, they're worse than some of these other countries. And instead of saying, why the hell is the bill so high? And why does it keep going up? Instead, they argue over who pays the bill, right? Is it going to be the taxpayer paying the bill? Is it going to be the patient paying the bill? Or some combination of those things. But they never step back and go, hey, why is the bill so damn high in the first place? And is there a way to lower the bill to what other people are paying? There's a reason for that. There's many reasons for that, but the 2 biggest ones are it's their fault that the bill is so high. They put the regulations in place that drive up the costs to fleece the American people so that the cronies that put them in office can benefit from them. And then the other reason is because if you focus on what the actual problem is, then the natural conclusion is to focus on what the solution is. They don't want a solution to this or anything else. They want the problem to slowly and steadily continue to get worse so that they can keep you in a constant state of fear and anxiety and inability to handle it on your own and frustration and dependence on them so that they can sell you their next solution, whatever that is. The foxes can't convince the hens to put them in charge of the hen house unless they allow a certain number of hens to get killed every day. And then whatever the foxes propose sounds like it could possibly be worse than what we're going through now. But then when it gets a little bit worse and they come back and go, well, the thing is, we need just a little bit more control over the hen house. That's what we have with COVID. That's what we have with healthcare. That's what we have with public safety. That's what we have with the crime rate. That's what we have with immigration. That's what we have with the cost of living. That's what we have with every single issue that people face is government making things worse to benefit the people who put them in office first and foremost, because this is nothing but a shell game. This is all about fleecing you. That's the number one reason. For the entire existence of the system, the base reason is to rob you of everything that you have in as steadily away as possible for you to not get too uncomfortable so that you just let them keep doing it. So that's number one. Number two is to keep you in a constant state of fear and dependency so that you don't step back and go, wait a second, why don't you just let me handle it? And then number three is to exert greater and greater control over your lives so that it's that much easier to manipulate you and control you and make your life difficult, again, so that they can fleece you and give to the people that put them in office. And once we realize that this entire thing is built around just a handful of incredibly powerful people using their levers of power to retain their market share and rob you of everything you have, not just your money, but your power, your ability to make decisions, your freedoms, and everything else, then we realize what the solution is very easily. The solution is to take the power back, to take the money back, to take the freedom and decision-making ability back, to take it out of the hands of the people who robbed us, put it back in our hands where it always damn well belonged, and work voluntarily with each other in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our systems of voluntary association to be able to solve the problems that we are facing. And the fact is, we won't have nearly as many problems that we're facing in the first place because they're not being created by an entity who has a vested interest in us doing poorly. And if you're listening to all this and saying, but that sounds like anarchy, well, I have some fantastic news for you. The reality is that The reality is that the logical conclusion of libertarianism that we do best when we are most free, and that any entity that violates your life, your rights, or your property is engaging in an act of aggression, which is not only wrong and morally bad, but also harmful and unhelpful and makes things worse. The logical conclusion of that is that the society that we want to see is one that is fully voluntary and fully free market. And that may not be something that we're able to achieve right now, or even next week or next month, but it should be our ideal goal. Every single action we should be taking is one towards taking as much of that power back as possible and understanding that there is no Laffer curve on this. The freer we are, the better we do. The less coercion there is, the better we do. The more freedom that we have, the better we do. The fewer barriers and burdens that are put in place to make our lives harder, the better that we do. And yes, that will lead itself to a fully voluntary society.
Yeah, it's, and what's interesting, because I've been, you know, reaching out and trying to have conversations intentionally with society's most difficult statists. And what's interesting is, like, you know, because of the system that we're in, right? It's very easy. Imagine I'm the government. It's very easy for me to sit here and say, yeah, I know things aren't that great right now, but it would be so much worse without me. And right. how what do we have to compare it to, right? Like, how do we know that's true or not? And they'll come up with, like, you know, all these, oh, well, you know, the terrorists, we'd still be speaking British if it weren't for the government. We'd be using that damn metric system, and think about how terrible that would be. And it's like, okay, right. But wait a minute. All these other countries seem to use metric and survive. Like, is that really
that
bad?
Right.
All the terrorists are going to come here. Well, maybe if you wouldn't piss so many people off in my name, they wouldn't hate me. You know, so there
maybe
is.
Maybe if you weren't that funding and training these terror groups, there wouldn't be so many too.
But it's easy for them to sit here and say, like, yeah, you know, and this is, you know, people are afraid of change, right? As much as, like, you know, everyone's always voting for hope and change, people are afraid of change because what if it doesn't work, right? What if we get rid of even one of these government systems and things get worse? Then we're going to have to fight and fight and fight for 20, 30 years to get it back.
Yep.
That's not a risk I'm willing to take. Status quo all the way. It's really dangerous. And then, of course, you have the magician aspect, right? Where the politicians are magicians, right? Oh, this system of finance is extremely complicated, far beyond the understanding of any normal man.
Yep.
But let me just tell you, our experts have told us we can just print the shit out of this money and things are going to be great.
So the beauty is that we have the truth on our side. The problem has been, and this is my belief, and after going around the country and even before then, and just, you know, doing my shows on Muddy Waters and everything else, we often are talking to people in a way that makes sense to us. libertarianism is a philosophy, and it is presented very often as a philosophy. Instead of a set of solutions, it's we present it as the praxis and the ethos behind it, right? So we talk about, and this is what attracts people like us to the movement, is we look at a problem and we go, what is the systemic reason that things are like this, right? We try to get to the root cause of it. And then we go even further. We look at all the different root causes and go, what do these things have in common? And how can I modify my belief system for these things to fit within them? We do kind of the opposite of what most people do. Most people fall in love with an idea or a system or a thing, and then if at all, then the rationality comes afterwards to kind of create a rational justification for such a thing. Some people don't even do that. They just ad hoc emotionally respond to this thing. Libertarians are not consequentialists, right? We believe that aggression is wrong because it's wrong. You shouldn't hurt people. You shouldn't take their stuff. You shouldn't harm them. And we have our concepts of belief behind that. We have the non-aggression principle. We have ideas like bodily autonomy and self-ownership. The problem is for the average person, when they come to us and they go, how are you going to fix healthcare? Because I think healthcare is too expensive here. And I think that, other countries are very wealthy. They aren't as wealthy as us, but they have free healthcare. Why can't we have free healthcare? I think healthcare is a human right. We get caught up in the healthcare is a human right and other countries have healthcare. So what we do is we say, well, first of all, there is no right to healthcare. Healthcare is a service and blah, 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 blah. Okay. And then we start talking, well, those other countries, they blah, 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 blah. What that person is hearing is, I'm not concerned about the cost of healthcare. I want to argue with you over concepts that you really don't fully understand. And they see that as, and then when that's coupled with saying, well, we don't want to fix this, we just want to give it to you to handle, it sounds a lot like we just want to neglect them and don't care what happens to them and don't even care to talk about what's going to happen to them. That's not a good look. Now, if that works for us, because we like to think of things in a cerebral way, we want to look at the philosophy behind it. Most people want to hear the consequential. They want to hear the consequences of
what's in it for me.
What's in it for me? And that makes sense. Most people are up to here with bills and work and issues with at home and the kids and
by design. By the way,
by design, they are kept just barely head above water so that they can't ever really get a moment to think and think things through. So you got to walk people through this. When people would show up to my events, because we would intentionally, I love having the people come out and cheer and, say taxation and stuff and all that. But I also wanted to get people in, normies, get them in and talk to them about stuff. And that's why I did so much Q&A. And I'd encourage people who had never heard of libertarianism to come to the mic and ask questions. And so I'd get, someone in town who would, a townie come up and say, well, what are you going to give us for education? And instead of going, I'm not going to give you anything. You don't have the right to take from other people. I'd say, I'm going to give you back everything. You have been robbed of billions of dollars of money from your states and your cities to give to a federal department of education that has failed you. Your boards, your school boards, your schools increasingly are unable to actually make any educational decisions. They're just having to look at whatever the federal and state regulations are and figure out some ham-handed way to work around it. We're going to dismantle all of that. We're going to give you all your money back. We're going to give you all your freedom back and all your power back. So you and the teachers that you work with, or even you as a teacher at home in a homeschool system or a homeschool co-op, can figure out what your students, what your kids need the best, because you know better for your education than some pandering politician and a bunch of billionaire cronies and bureaucrats hundreds and thousands of miles away who have proven that they do not care about you. And I would say that and get standing ovations from groups of normies who will walk away still thinking that the government owes them something. But what they heard was that we're going to fix this problem and give them the power back so that they can take care of it. Okay. That's the first step into getting people to get behind our ideas. We're not watering it down. We're not lying to them. I'm talking to them about dismantling federal and state education programs explicitly. I'm selling them on, at the very least, decentralized education, and you could interpret it as fully privatized education. I didn't say the free market. I didn't say the invisible hand. I didn't say capitalism. I didn't say privatized. I presented it in a way that made sense to them without watering it down and making it in a way that connected with them. And they walk away going, wow, government made this problem, but they're going to fix it by giving me the power back. And we can do that with everything. We have to present the solution first. Once we get them in and they go, wow, well, how come this works and how come this works and how come this works? And they want to be interested to find out more. Then we can explain why it works. But first we have to explain that it works. And when we do that, we can bring lots of people in and we can grow this into a viable movement that can win in every lever of power, not to take over, not to be the lesser of three evils, but to dismantle this thing and to give people their freedom back so we can be freer, so we can prosper, so we can actually accomplish all these things we fantasize about doing every 4 years, ending the Fed, ending the wars, ending taxation, ending zoning, ending all these infringements on our lives, actually get those things accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of become my whole philosophy as far as everything I'm working on. And I actually have these initiatives for that, for all these different programs, healthcare, rent, everything else. And I mean, this is really the thing. And you look at a lot of people, and especially a lot of people who are struggling, right? The reason so many people support Bernie Sanders, it's not like they woke up one day and they were like, oh my God, socialism. You know what? This system screwed up. I'm going to go get socialism. No. They woke up and they're like, oh man, the college system is screwed up. I owe $100,000. I don't even have a degree that'll get me a job. My grandma's sick and we got to come up with 500 grand to pay for her hospital bills. Those are the problems they're looking at. And you can tell them anything. Oh yeah, free markets, capitalism. Like, and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? How am I going to pay my bills? Right.
How am I going to pay this bill? Yeah.
Exactly. How am I going to get out of debt? How am I going to make sure I have a roof over my head? How am I going to make sure I have food in my stomach? And Bernie Sanders is one of the only people out there. Don't worry, you guys, I'm going to take care of you. I know that's a terrible impersonation, but that's what he's promising them. And libertarians are basically saying, oh, you know, you got to learn how to take care of yourself. And it's like, I've been trying to take care of myself. I've been busting my ass 60 hours a week.
Yes.
I've been paying all my bills. I've been trying to be responsible and I just keep getting robbed and it doesn't work. And you're just telling me to go screw myself. That's not the message that works.
Exactly.
We got to be more like Bernie Sanders.
We have to be more like Bernie Sanders. No, you're 100% correct. Bernie Sanders doesn't say the problem is that we need to seize the means of production and you only have your chains to lose. He didn't do that. He says, I'm going to fix your healthcare by making it free. I'm going to fix your education by making it free. These multi-billionaire cronies have robbed you. And he's right. They have robbed you, right? He's saying everything that needs to be said. He's explaining. He actually explains the problem. He talks about sometimes that government's driven up the cost of healthcare to make the cronies richer. He says all that. Then he says, we're going to tax those cronies and give you back what you need, what you deserve, because it's a human right. What he's not telling you is he's actually giving more power to those cronies to make things even harder for you, but that he'll have control over it and he'll have your vote forever because you'll be dependent on him. But he presents a solution. He empathizes with the person. He doesn't try to blame them for it because it's not their fault. And he doesn't try to say, hey, this is on you, pal. You got to figure it out for yourself. He sells them a solution. And then
the only solution,
he explains the solution is socialism or democratic socialism or whatever. We need to do the same with libertarianism, not by watering down our message, but by showing how it actually works. And that's what we need to do.
You got to bait the hook. I mean, that's, and I know that sounds terrible, right? It sounds like, the manipulative politicians here talking, but it's like, no, that's what it is. Like you get their attention first with something that they want, and then you can explain to them how it's going to work. But at least they know from the get go that at least you understand they have a problem and you care about their problem and you want to solve it. That's the only way to make it happen.
There is not a single, and I unfortunately I have to go after this, but there is not a single thing, idea, product, service, political concept, anything that you can sell or get people engaged to join you on by telling them that essentially you don't care about them or it's their fault. You have to explain. First of all, you have to empathize with the person. You have to give a brief explanation as to how we got here. Okay, and I don't mean you have to start pulling out a bibliography of, you know, and then on this year they did a 12% increase. No, you give a basic rundown of why we're here, and then you explain how we can fix it. In again, easy to understand terms. You do not have to break out terms. In fact, please don't break out terms like invisible hand. That sounds like magic. If you don't understand the concept of the invisible. If you don't understand the concept of the invisible hand of the market, it sounds like you're saying, I'm going to take your healthcare and replace it with magic. Okay. And also I don't care about you. Right. So here's some magic, you moron. I don't even like you. You have to explain simply and concisely how you can fix their issue.
In their language.
Get them in their language in a way that connects with them. Bring them in. And then from there, if they're even interested to know, some people are going to be perfectly fine with just knowing that it works and voting for you based on that. Some people are going to go, but why does it work? Then we can explain the philosophy of it. But you can't start with philosophy with people. With 99% of people, they don't care about the ethos or the praxis behind. They want to know how it's going to work. They don't even know what ethos or praxis are. They want to know how it's going to actually get fixed. So focus on solutions-oriented language. If you're selling anything, my business, if I had gone around saying, hey, you know what the problem with your website is? You're an idiot for picking the wrong people to do your website. You've never even heard of search engine optimization, have you? What a schmuck. And you know, you don't do that. You say the reason that you're not getting the return on investment you wanted is because they didn't do this, 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 and this. I'm going to fix this by doing this, 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 and this for the low price of blah, blah, blah. This is how you sell anything. And politics is sales. We don't like it. It makes our skin crawl. It makes us sick. We don't even like politics. I don't like politics, but it's sales. You have to sell the idea. Don't lie. Don't water it down. Don't pull one over on them. Just explain it in a way that they understand and focus on how it will solve their problems, and you'll win normies all day long. And again, Dan, thanks so much for having me on. I greatly appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Before you go, anything you want to plug? Website? Where can people find you? Everybody knows who you are.
But I was going to say, like, yeah, spiel. I mean, find me. Yeah, no, I'm on Facebook. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. My website, spikecohen.com, is coming out soon. Not yet, just a few days. It'll be out. Muddied Waters Media, which is where I do my podcasting. That's everywhere. That's on all social media platforms. That's on all podcasting platforms. It's also at muddiedwatersmedia.com. And I'm going to be more than likely in or near wherever you live in this country, unless you're in Mexico, because I don't have any plans yet on going to Mexico, but possibly very soon. I will be in. Get your passport. Yeah, you got to get your passport and join me in Mexico. Or you can just do like Dan and just get there somehow. You also, I'll be in Wasilla, Alaska next weekend for the Gold Rush event. The following weekend, I will be in Eau Claire, Wisconsin for their convention, the Wisconsin Convention. And a couple weeks after that, I'll be in Fresno, California. Check out my social media. I've got all my different events that are upcoming there. And come out and see me. If you're anywhere near any of these things I'm going to be at, I'm going to be in a lot of states in the next few months. So come out and see me, and I'd love to meet you in person. Thank you again for having me on,
awesome.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on anytime. You're always welcome here. Feel free to drop off if you got to run. I'm just going to wrap this up. So thank you everybody for tuning in. This was awesome. If you liked the show, even if you didn't, remember to share it.
thank you for not liking it.
Just share it so you could tell all your friends this is what idiot libertarians talk about all day. Because hey, you never know. Maybe one of them will like it.
And go to nugofknowledge.com. Nug of knowledge.
That's And enter the code Spike, right?
Spike for 10% off.
Spike. There you go. Anywhere you get your favorite podcast, head over there, look for Taxation and Theft. You can get this on a podcast. And of course, we're on YouTube, youtube.com/taxationandtheft. And head over to danforfreedom.com as we start to ramp up the gubernatorial campaign. Awesome stuff going on over there. We're going to fix Texas up real nice. Texas, which is an anagram for taxes, unfortunately. Terrible, I know. But
make Texas Tejas again. And then that way it's not taxes.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Until next time, guys, taxation is theft. I'll see you around.
Taxation is theft.